Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Estonian Football Podcast. Today we are delighted to be joined by the Deputy General Secretary and the head of the Football Management Department of the EGL, Mikael Uyvelet. Thank you for coming on, Mikael. How are you doing today?
Yeah, thank you for the invite, and really well, and your pronunciation was well practiced. So no good. Happy to be here, and happy to be on the world's leading Estonian football podcast in English. So definitely happy to be, and have been following you once in a while. So I've been listening, and it's good to be finally on air here as well.
That's a great advertisement for us. We'll take that for sure. So if you could like explain to the people who listened, like what your main job role is with the Estonian FA.
Yeah, so I work in the office for quite some years already. For many years, I used to be involved more in the public relations domain. So I was head of the public relations and partnerships department. So that meant when I started, I had a lot of things to do with the national team. So I traveled all around Europe and also the world with the national team. But since time has passed, then I now switched roles. We had quite a significant structural changes at the end of last year. So now I work as the head of the football management department, we call it. It means that this department is let's say consists of people who run the competitions. So that means everyday competitions starting from the top down to grassroots and youth competitions as well. And then we also take care of events and match organization. Also, the league development is here in my department, plus then the referees as well. But of course, in each association, the referees are like a separate island because they are not controllable in the normal way of like management, because they have their own separate systems where they are connected to UEFA and FIFA and so on. So I'm managing that department, that area as well, sort of, but I'm not responsible when it comes to, of course, referees development, etc. This is something where the UEFA and FIFA specialists come in.
How close would you be, would you say, to Ivar Polak, who obviously is, you know, the president? So how does your role coincide with what he does?
Yeah, we definitely communicate on a daily basis. So, well, not every day, but let's say on most days there are some things we speak of. Yeah, he is a very active president. So there are definitely in the European footballing landscapes, let's say, two type of presidents. One is like more, let's say, the honorary presidents, I would call them. Let's say people who are more in the role of a president and who maybe deliver speeches and so on. And then there are other types like Ivar who are very active and very involved in different meetings, in different regulations, like competitions, all these kind of things. So yeah, definitely we are quite closely involved when it comes to the football management. But he's kind of, let's say, more a visionary person. So and we in the office here, we try to do more the practical everyday work, and then he kind of gives what the board kind of what is the vision of the board when it comes to developing the game and also different competitions, and then we kind of reflect on what is possible and what are the what is the take here in the office. So it's sometimes, of course, the vision and the everyday business, it's also two separate things. But I think that's always the role of the board, is to, let's say, dream bigger. And we at the office, we should kind of deliver what's asked for. So that's kind of the role separation.
What is the long-term vision? Like, is there, like, what's the direction for Estonian football with the Premier League and international?
Yeah, so we are actually since late autumn, we are in the process currently of developing our new strategic plan for the next 5 years or so. So, but definitely one of the cornerstones here is quality youth work. This has been already for the last years quite a significant place where we have invested, because what is clear is that we need to raise the level of youth players and youth clubs. And we have now launched the youth quality standard system, which will start from this year. We have prepared it quite a long time. So this is definitely one of the key things. The other thing is the league development in general. So that means the league must be sportively competitive, and that means also that the differences inside the league cannot be huge. So that means that if a top team is playing against a team which is fighting for survival in the league, this should also be competitive, because otherwise this is the kind of the step to progress also in Europe. And thirdly, of course, we cannot look past the success of national teams, because this is something where all Estonians are very keen on, that our men's national team would qualify for the Euros, and also that our women's national team would make a next step and climb one pot higher in the UEFA Nations League system when it comes to the women's national teams. What has been for my kind of topic for many years has been how to get more people to the stadium, also for the national team matches. We have had some full houses here at the national stadium, but of course there is still room for improvement. So our goal, definitely for the next 5 years, would be to have an average of 10,000 people at the men's national team home matches, which has currently been close to 10,000 when it comes to qualifiers. But we would like to, let's say, raise the bar that also include the Nations League home matches in that pot. So it's an ambitious goal, but we think that this should be something to work for.
How would you say the progress has been for Estonian football in the last 10 years? You know, especially since we've been kind of watching it and following it, what's it, 4 or 5 years we've been doing it, we can see an improvement. How does it feel for you being in the position you're in?
Yeah, so of course, 10 years, I mean, if you look at like the last decade or so, or the last 10 years, it's quite a long time already. And I'm just thinking that amongst these 10 years have been really like some crazy important events, like this national stadium was fully built and opened for Super Cup in 2018. So this was a huge huge issue in a way that we this is on one hand the event that the Super Cup took place in Estonia. This was a huge success, but also that the stadium was really fully built and fully ready. We also hosted 2 years ago now the UEFA Under 17 women's finals here in Estonia, which was a major milestone for women's and girls football, because we invest a lot to bring more girls and women to play. And the last 10 years has seen almost around 50% is the growth when it comes to participation on women's and girls side. But yeah, so these kind of tournaments, they help a lot. VAR, when it comes to referees, was introduced during the last years. The first Estonian referee qualified for the World Cup, which was the Women's World Cup, and Karolin Kaevoja was the referee, and she also was officiating the Women's Champions League final. So these are quite a significant milestones on the refereeing side. Also, our referee Grigori Oshumkov was refereeing the Futsal Champions League Final Four, which is also something to remember. I know that most people, they look at the national team results, but you know, when you work at the association, it's the national team results are of course very important, because this is something that unites the nation and kind of reflects the status of football in a way. But there's so much that is like on a daily basis what we take care of. So I'm just remembering also that next year we will host the Under 17 boys tournament, the final tournament of UEFA here in Estonia. 10 years ago, exactly, we hosted the beach soccer European final tournament as well in Brno, which was quite a nice event. So, one thing when I look at the progress has been how many different things we have reached. Of course, there is so much potential. There's so much still to do, but obviously, when we compare us from Estonia to other countries, then we mainly compare how our clubs are doing, how our men's top clubs are doing in the European competitions, and we also compare how the national teams are doing. But we also, I think, need to look at the development side, because this is something we can control more than the things going on the pitch. This is for the players and staff and the coaches to control. We in the office, we are here like more when it comes to development. So just to my final remark on the last let's say decade is the indoor halls, I think, which is really important. We didn't have basically we had almost zero indoor halls when we started this process. The first one was opened, I think it was autumn 2013 here at the National Stadium Center. This was the first permanent indoor hall, because there was some where you took the dome off for the summer, but now we are reaching almost 15 already. So this is a huge thing, because before, when an Englishman was playing football for 10 years, they played really for 10 years. But in Estonia, you could only play football for, I don't know, 7 years or something, because the other 3 years you were just skating on the football field because of the climatic conditions. And it was icy, it was cold, it was windy. So when you think about quality, and when you think about especially quality of youth work quality, then this is definitely something which was lacking. Now this is much better. So these are the positive things from the last decade or so.
Do you talk to other federations for like knowledge? So like an example would be, let's say, Georgia, who qualified for the Euros last year. They've got players like Kvaratskhelia at PSG, Mamardashvili just signed for Liverpool. Like, do you like look at that or like speak to people there and say like, how can we copy that as well?
Yeah, we have now arranged like this, that we have yearly meetings with the Finnish FA. So we meet 1 year in Estonia, 1 year in Finland, and this is exactly done that we on the administrative side, but also on the sportive side, we exchange the experiences. Our coaches and our technical staff is regularly going to different UEFA events. So even currently, when we are speaking here, two of our technical department specialists are in Lithuania to exchange ideas there at the UEFA event. So this is quite regular, because one thing is that UEFA organizes itself different, they call it UEFA Share workshops. So that means that they invite three or four different delegations from different associations, and then they put up a program where you can share the knowledge. So I think especially on UEFA side, this knowledge sharing is something really, let's say, common already for years. So yeah, definitely, we look for other countries for ideas, and we have analyzed countries who are, let's say, similar size and similar population. So that is, of course, it's nice always to analyze England or Germany, but it's much more reasonable to analyze Slovenia or Finland or Latvia or even the likes of maybe Montenegro, Albania, which are maybe a bit more culturally a bit more further away from us, but population wise and country size, they are more similar. So yeah, definitely a big yes for knowledge sharing.
What initiatives do you have in place to attract young people to play football?
Quite many. During the past 10 years, the participation numbers have risen, I think it was 27%, so which is quite okay. Would say even quite good, but you know, Estonians are quite modest when it comes to saying something positive about themselves. But we had, for example, last year we had grassroots events organized by our grassroots department, where we had a bit more than 10,000 participants. So that means that there are school children from the early years. They come to participate at different events. So this is more to develop their skills and to engage them in a participation way, rather than being like a top class competitive event. So it's more to kind of engage them and make football more interesting for them. Another big project is on the women's side and the girls' side. We have, together with UEFA, launched the UEFA Playmakers. So that means that we have a project leader in the association, and she has arranged a set of clubs who deliver who have, let's say, first they are trained by our trainers, and then they go to schools, they go to kindergartens, and they teach the children how football can be entertaining through the stories of Disney. So like Elsa is the hero of little girls, and she's kind of participating there. It's kind of on one end it's like an imaginary situation, but on the other hand it's also that they use like different like footballs which are colored and different like shirts, and so they make it more entertaining and they make it more joyful and playful. So, and with that, the aim is to attract the girls to stay connected with football. Other project as well with our new partner Euronics, who is the technical provider. We launched a kind of special like camp for girls, where girls who have not maybe been that closely involved with football yet can come and can make their first steps. So kind of course a lot is done in cooperation with clubs, but also the association, we can also like launch different projects like the Playmakers and like this camps where the first kind of introduction can be made with football.
Does the Federation support much with the youth academies, like to help keep the academies in place and that stuff?
Yeah, so I think in many European countries it's like this, that there is already a quite long tradition of football academies, and also kind of there is a system how to support and how to license them. So in our case, we are just making the first steps. So we have now, for the last 3 or 4 years, we have had youth work coordinators project from the association side. So that means that the top clubs who are licensed, they can enter the program. We support the wage for this youth work coordinator, and what it means that this person is responsible for the quality of youth work in the club. So that means that education of coaches and so on. And now we want to make a next step. Where we have this youth quality standard in place. We start this year with the first two levels of the standard. We want to have it like a five level youth quality standard system. So that means that you get a star, 1 star up to 5 stars. 5 star would be the maximum, that is like already the academy level, like a really top academy level. 1, 2, and 3 stars are like a good grassroots club, a good feeder club, so to say. So we start with the first 2 stars this year, and then we go on three, four, and five. And the idea is that we also want to tie it with the education system in Estonia, so that the Estonian like the governmental system would recognize the system as part of the education system. So that would also mean that the football academies would get finance, would get like funds from also the government or the local municipalities, in similar way like other institutions which offer education would get. So that is our aim, let's say, I wouldn't say long term, but this is, let's say, maybe actually the next 3, 4, 5 years, what is the plan, how to move on. And this is again to address one of the key issues what we have here is the youth quality. I mean, it's not a question about the quantity anymore, because we have of course we want to have still more players, but we have already around 25,000 registered football players, and a lot of them are youngsters under the age of 19. So we have to raise the bar so that the quality can also properly develop, because the in many places the let's say people get the chance to play football, but the question is, do the most talented players, do they get the chance to develop to become international level professional? And that is something what the youth quality standard system should address.
How do you feel the current men and women's national teams are getting on at the moment?
So and so. Definitely, we would like to be in a better position when it comes on both men and women. On the men's side, we have now from last year, we have the new coaching staff with Jürgen Henn as the head coach. There is a plan set in place to which, in a positive on a positive scenario, would end by qualifying to the next Euro. There are certain steps, of course. This year we have the qualifiers for the World Cup, which are of course hard, because we know the lack of the number of places for European teams. So it's very, very hard to qualify for that. But we see this qualification campaign for the World Cup, and also next year's Nations League, we see this as a preparation for the European Championship qualifiers, which come in 2027. So this is the idea on the men's side. On the women's side, we have us again as well a new coach, Alexander Shevoldayeva now, and the aim is of course to raise the level also on the women's side. We have now had quite a significant number of female players also going abroad to play as professionals, which is a very positive sign. And some youngsters are also coming who were also part of the under 17 final tournament. So that means that the goal is also to go one step higher. So we are now in the third level, third tier, when it comes to the women's. Women's have three levels, so we want to climb one level higher in the Nations League system on the women's side. So these are the two aims, one on the men's, one on the women's side, when it comes to the upcoming years. But of course, what was very important for the fans was that we won the Baltic Cup on the men's side after many, many years of disappointment. And also on the women's side, again, we won. So we want to be first in the Baltics, but also on the men's side, take the aim to qualify for the Euros for the first time, and on the women's side, to be to take the next step to climb up from the third pot.
What do you think is the biggest obstacle when competing with the bigger nations?
It would be very easy to say, of course, money and human resources. This would be the most logical and no-brainer answer, so to say. But I would still go back to the youth quality, because I believe that it's not anymore the question of number of players. Because when you look at when we have analyzed other countries, then of course their numbers are even higher. But out of this number of young players, we should be able to raise the quality. So this is definitely, I think, the youth work quality, I think, is the main thing where we have issues. Because you see the players who have left Estonia at quite an early age, like 16, 17, they have joined academies from from big clubs. Then you see that the level very often has been quite high later. Well, the likes of Carl Jakob Hein is a good example. Of course, he was very talented and he moved to Arsenal at a very early age. But so definitely we need the competition and quality on the youth side. One idea which we have now launched a couple of years ago is the Youth Baltic League. So that means that our youngsters they play against the top teams from Latvia and Lithuania. I think really important because I think the same applies to Latvia and Lithuania. They have the same issues that the youth work quality is, let's say, depends on let's say it should be better in all the three Baltic countries, and one of the kind of the tools should be the Youth Baltic League. We have some ideas to reform it as well, the Youth Baltic League, and even to expand the number of matches we play there. So this is an idea which is on the table currently.
How do you provide support for, let's say, Jürgen Henn in his role as national team manager?
Yeah, well, Mikko Puppart, he's the team manager. So that means he takes care of different organizational issues. So, and we have regular meetings with Mikko, who is the team manager, and also we sometimes involve Jürgen when needed. So it's more like this, that Jürgen kind of gives his vision. So what goes on the field is of course something that Jürgen and his assistants take care of, but when it things concern stuff which is going on off the field, I mean like traveling for example, and the quality of training pitches, and I don't know, when it comes to different like kit supplier issues and stuff like this. So this is something when we come in, and then we can support him. And also when, for example, he wants to add somebody to the staff. So for example, when he wants to have an extra coach, or when he wants to have better options for analyzing the match. So because, you know, we make cooperation with different companies who analyze the matches, and who also analyze the matches of the players who play in foreign leagues. So, for example, these kind of organizational things are this is a place where we can help him, and this for this we have regular meetings. So we do it not after every training camp, but we do it like, for example, when we kick off a cycle, and then when we end the cycle, then we plan like traveling, eating, hotels, transportation, like support for extra coaches or whatever is needed. So these kind of things, then we agree beforehand, and then when the cycle is over, then we make an analysis of how everything went, and then we kind of reflect on do we need to change anything or not. So this is something, of course, he's the one who must lead kind of the project. I mean, Jürgen, in a way that who must look, okay, I need this extra, I need that extra, but we can then adjust to his needs.
Then moving on to like the league football, like the Premier Liga, how do we make that more competitive?
Yeah, it's a good question. One of the things we have now tried is the solidarity schemes, which we offer to the Premier League clubs. So what it means, in a very brief overview, is that we finance the salary of players. So, and it, when this is concerning the clubs who do not play in European competitions. So, because the ones who play in European competitions get quite a significant support from UEFA, but the others, they get nothing. So that's now the question, where we support the salary of six players for those who don't play in Europe. Plus, we have the youth grant system, so that means that each club can get the maximum six youth grants for their players. So these are like the tools where we try to kind of help them. But on the other hand, of course, the youth quality. Again, I have to stress this for the, I don't know, fifth or sixth time in during this conversation already, is that we need to get the youth quality better also in the top league clubs. Very happy that certain clubs have done really a lot here. They have restructured their clubs. They are doing cooperation with different schools to facilitate academy type like environments and so on. So very happy with the developments on that side. And this is something which will help to raise the level. So definitely we need more money. We need more finance. We need to have the clubs more sustainable when it comes to the first team, because the clubs are sustainable when it comes to the youth work. This is okay. The local municipalities support them. The parents, they pay a monthly fee to and so on. But the key question is how to make more profit for the clubs from the top football, from the professional football, because the main two things where this money comes from in other countries is ticket sales, which is low in Estonia. It's on the rise, but it's still low. And the other thing is revenue from the TV rights, which is not existing in Estonia because of there is no competition in the TV market because of the small market. So we need to raise, and this is something where Veiko Soo, who is the executive of the Premium Liiga, he has been working with his team to find. Again, there is no quick solution to difficult problems. That's something I've learned working here. There are the solutions when you go step by step. So what are the ideas? How to earn, let's say, 25,000 euros from this, another 25 from that. And when you add it up, when you have basically 10 different areas where you can earn 25,000 for the clubs. Is it merchandise? Is it ticketing? Is it some fan events? Is it some charity? Whatever it is, you can earn it. And then if it's 10 times 25,000, then you already have a significant support when you look at the budgets from the top league. So it's more of getting the funds and then spending it for the good of the quality. So key thing definitely is to find these areas where to fund the professional football. And this is something where we have also some ideas. I think we will come public with them during this year, which could be, let's say, another, let's say, step in this league development as well. But of course it's hard because you have competitors. Everybody looks at the Premiership. The easy question that everybody emotionally asks, why don't we have the same as in the Premiership? Because they see full stadiums, 60,000 people, perfect the TV coverage, everything. So this is something it's so easily accessible. And of course, emotionally, you get this comparison. But there's a lot of work to do to get to that level. And I'm very, let's say, sometimes it's very normal that fans are critical, and fans should be critical and demanding. But on the other hand, we should also, let's say something positive about those people. I mean, especially in the clubs, who really work a lot to get the people attending the matches, who work a lot to get sponsors. So this is something sometimes when the season ends, I remind myself that we need to say thank you for those people who come to see the matches, of course, as well, those loyal fans who are there, but also to those club officials who have really done their absolute best in getting the people there.
Do you feel that Estonian clubs will soon have a decent impact in European football? We see, especially the Conference League now, you have Riga in Latvia who have just, they drew with Galatasaray, for example, and they just beat Ajax. How long do you think it would take before we see Levadia or Flora competing?
Yeah, definitely. This is a goal for I think both Levadia Flora, but also I think for Paide and Nõmme Kalju, it's the same. They want to be top like performers in Europe. Flora showed that it's possible because, as you remember, they qualified for the Conference League group stage. But also this season, last summer, when they were playing against the Icelandic team Víkingur. As you remember, they were not far away from beating them, And Víkingur reached the group stage of Conference League, and now will play even in the playoffs against, I think it was Panathinaikos. They will play now in Helsinki their playoff match. So if Víkingur can do it, then we can do it. And the level wasn't, even Flora, who didn't have the best season at all, was quite competitive playing against them. So in this way, I'm positive. I'm very positive when I look at Levadia as well, that they have done a lot of investment in their team. They have long-term contracts with key players. They have developed the team step by step. This year will be now their kind of test, but I think they have a great chance. I think to reach Conference League group stage is something that should be, I wouldn't say, something that maybe happens every year, but I really hope that, let's say, during the next 5 seasons, 2 or 3 times, we can qualify to the Conference League group stage. Of course, there are certain things like the draw and how certain matches go, but I would still say that the league development should be that far that we can be a more, let's say, we can not only visit the Conference League group stage once, but we can be a more frequent flyer, let's say, put it like this.
Do you have like plans to like build football stadiums around Estonia? Like, also, we were talking the other day where sometimes you watch like Levadia or Flora and they're playing Narva, for example, and there's 100 people in the Alakok. Do you feel like that puts sponsors off a little bit from investing into the league?
Definitely, the product must look really good. And one thing is the infrastructure and the people. So spectators, I mean. So infrastructure is definitely a key area. We have now, like say, let's say, a bare minimum. We have in all cases. In some cases, we have even really good infrastructure, and where we don't. Let's say we don't need to question anymore, but I think that the issue is that the investments should be more from the local government and from the government, because the association can only do can only do something, but we don't have the capability to invest in all stadiums across Estonia. We have the capability to lobby and to convince people, and we had infrastructure plan for the last 12 years. So this autumn we will launch the next infrastructure plan. We have already prepared it, and that would also mean that our people we'll go to all local municipalities in Estonia, like we did the last time. So 12 years ago, we did a round of all local municipalities in Estonia. We went to each local municipality, made a plan how to develop football infrastructure, and let's say lobbied and tried to convince the local municipality to put it in their own strategic development plan. In some cases, of course, it worked. In some cases, of course, it was not successful. So now we do another round. It's quite a number of meetings, but we will do it, of course, in cooperation with the local clubs, because in the end of the day, association is can be here the driving force, but the one who will use it is the local club, and they know the best what are the conditions needed, and they also know the best what is the relationship between the club and, for example, the local municipality. So in this sense, we need to push it. We have a minimum here now. Some stadiums are really good, but there is quite a lot of room for improvement, especially when it comes to spectators' conditions, especially when it comes to that. I mean, of course, A. Le Coq Arena is not a question when it comes to spectator conditions. Here you have good facilities, but especially when it comes to the early spring matches at artificial stadiums, there are already tribunes with a roof, but there are still the next steps need to be made, like which is the area where the spectators can feel themselves comfortable or warm during the especially the colder months of the year, and where we live, definitely we will have colder months more and more. So we just need to put the infrastructure in place, and it's quite hard because the municipalities have because we have recession in Estonia for quite some years already, and the municipalities say, okay, we don't have so much money to invest in football. Why should it be football? So this is something that the Estonian Football Association is very much concerned, and let's say this is our area where we try to convince the local municipalities why you need to invest in football, why you need to invest in football infrastructure, because it's the number one sport for youth. It's the most popular sport when it comes to people watching it. So these are and it also gives back to the society because we have made the quite a thorough research of the social return on investment of football in Estonia. So that showed clearly that the local municipalities and the Estonia in general benefits a lot of from football because they get a lot of jobs, taxes, different commercial things, but also when you look at the health of people. So these are the arguments what we should emphasize when we drive around the country and speak with local municipalities.
Just to bounce off your answer a bit. So let's take Sportland Arena, for example. From what I read, they were supposed to have four stands eventually built to that. Are there still plans to do that?
Yes, the idea is to have it. There's a project of 4,500 seats, so and covered from four different from all the stands. So it should be like a proper stadium. We want to get the funds for that from the government or from the city government. So we are in talks with them, so to get public funds for this. Because this is something again where the UEFA and FIFA calendar say that we need to play actually also during the winter months. So the women's football, the FIFA match dates for women's national teams, these are end of November, early December, but also in mid-February. So that means that to play on natural grass in Estonia during that time, it's very, very hard. Same applies to the European competitions. So when we qualify for group stage, we need to play in December and possibly also in January, like Riga showed now against Ajax. They played on, I think it was 23rd of January in Riga against Ajax, 10 o'clock kickoff local time, which was crazy. But so. We need this kind of artificial pitch also for this winter months. So this is one of the arguments as well that we need support for this because this is a quite a huge investment. The association on its own, it's very hard to make this investment. So normally in most of the countries, the local municipalities and the government are those who finance the infrastructure, and then the clubs and the associations, they manage it. So in our case, in many cases, in many cities, the club and the association have been the ones who have taken the initiative and invested quite a lot. So this is something we want to kind of put more responsibility now on local governments and also the government.
Would you agree that the Sportland Arena is the coldest stadium in Europe?
There was a saying amongst the people who work here that the Kadriorg Stadium is the coldest place on
Okay.
earth because when you are like when you sit the main stand of Kadriorg Stadium, when you sit there and like under the roof, and sometimes even during summer when there's quite hot then there because it's a concrete tribune, old concrete tribune with a roof, and the sun doesn't shine to that direction, then sometimes it's really cold there even if the sun is shining to the other parts of the stadium. So maybe Kadriorg has some benefits in front of Sportland Arena, but I agree that because the winds here And because it's not closed from all four sides, there is the wind circles there in quite yeah I was how would you say in quite big portions. So and of course in some days it's really calm, but definitely this shows as well that Sportland Arena needs to be fully built by all from all four sides.
Yeah, we watched the derby there a few years back, and we got sunburn and frostbite on the same
This is possible only in Estonia, yeah? This is
Yeah, it was like spot the foreigner. Yeah. Moving on to let's talk about fan engagement. So something that really bugs us with Estonian football is the lack of social media kind of engagement with clubs. We've kind of figured Tallinna Kalev and Levadia are like the main active ones on Twitter or X now, whichever you want to call it. But Instagram, most of them seem to be active, but a lot of people use Twitter, but no one seems to utilize it. Do you feel that's something that the Federation could kind of push to help with engagement?
Absolutely. We have now in February we have a seminar for the top clubs and the licensed clubs coming up, and the subject is social media. We have a German guy coming to deliver the lecture, who is quite experienced, who has also worked at different UEFA projects. So we bring him to kind of again, to inspire the clubs. I think the main issue is human resource in many cases, and maybe also, I don't know, you can reflect on that better than me. Maybe is that we feel here in Estonia that the culture, the volunteering culture around the clubs is quite low, let's say, or quite not in a good shape, because there are only a few clubs who, let's say, utilize the potential of volunteering. And I think to even when it comes to social media content, if there is a plan, if it's properly constructed, volunteers can who are like really the fans, top fans of the club, can do a big thing here. So I think even you guys, you show that to put up a podcast and to really keep it something that people listen to, and that it's really engaging. It doesn't cost you anything. It's just a question of do you want it to do it or not? Are you motivated, self-motivated in a way? And I think this is something which still needs to be developed when it comes to the club culture and involving the volunteers.
Do you feel like the fans could be the ones that could influence a positive direction in Estonian football?
Definitely, fans are. I think even if you sometimes people look at, okay, you have like 400 people on average going to the Estonian Top League games. That though this is a small number. Yeah, of course, when you compare it to like bigger football countries, it's a small number. When you look at inside Estonia, then when you compare it to other team sports, it's not a big, it's not a small number. It's quite a significant number. And also, even if it's 400 people, some people say that it's like only 400. There are that means that there are still quite a lot of people who are interested. One thing is when you go to the stadium, and the other thing is if you are interested or not, if you follow the live feed, if you follow the highlights of matches. So these are two different things. So I think there are quite a lot of people who follow the teams already, but still do not come regularly to the stadium. So this is but anyway, even if they are not regularly at the stadium, I think they have a big influence, because the traffic which is generated by the fans, I mean online, that they do they follow a certain club, do they react on it, do they follow certain players, do they come along with campaigns launched by clubs. Absolutely, the fans. I have, let's say, my career, so to say, in football. It started from the fan tribune. So first time I visited the Estonian national team match, I was at the fan tribune, and then I kind of looked at, okay, this is a really nice place. And then I looked, how can I give how can I be involved in football in Estonia? And that. That's how it started. I think as I communicate regularly with fans and with fan groups, their ideas and their what they think of football and what they propose, how different regulations can be different, and definitely they have influence. Like, of course, it's not 100% like the fans want it. It's never. It's a compromise. Because there is the association, there are the clubs, then there are fans. But it must be that everybody is heard of, and everybody is really involved in the decision-making process. And if fans feel that, then I think they also come to see their league, and they also follow the club.
What would you say would be the key area for improvement in Estonian football?
You think of the league or in general?
Just in general.
Definitely the quality of youth work. I must emphasize it again. This is something which will build on the success of national teams, but also clubs. Second thing I would say is generating revenue, and creating sustainable ways to manage professional football. This is the second thing I would say. And third thing, still I would say infrastructure, in because it's, I mean, I don't have anything negative to say about the national stadium, apart from the plans we have that to install the hybrid grass here at the National Stadium, to make it, let's say, to improve the conditions, especially in autumn when the weather is not so good. But these are minor things. But the infrastructure in general, when it comes to indoor halls, we need more. When it comes to proper stadiums, what I mean with floodlights, with roof, with good conditions for spectators. In the top league, but also in Esiliiga as well, and in the women's football. So definitely, I mean, these three things come to my mind at first.
I'm not sure if you're allowed to answer this or not, so you don't have to, but what's your opinions on Ragnar Klavan running? Like, what's like the overall mood with that?
I think. It's always good if there is a debate on how to move forward. Definitely, there's nothing wrong with discussing things publicly about how to move forward. As working here at the association, and not being involved in the campaigns, so then of course I don't have a public opinion on it. But I think. The debates are always good. One thing which is kind of concerning me, I think in general, not only when it comes to the Football Association president election, but generally when it comes to elections these days, or nowadays, I should say, is that if the debates are based on facts, I think the debates are really good. If people live in different, like, bubbles, information bubbles, and then everybody has its own truth, so to say, then we end up living in a post-truth society, and then we don't debate anymore, then we just kind of yell at each other. And this is something I think a good debate consists of people who put up the facts, look at them, and then say their opinion on how we should do something. But if we ignore the facts and just let's say think of let's say push our own opinion, and we then then the debate quality is low. So what I hope, not specifically in this debate, but in general in debates, is that the facts are always there, and if the facts are there, then I think like debates are always good, because then you get a proportion of ideas, and then people explain what they do, and this can never be a bad thing.
We talk so Ivar Polak, he has got a lot of criticism. He's been scandals, whatever. What exactly is he like as a person?
I think yeah, well, I've been now working quite many years in the same organization as he's the president. He's quite different, though. The public image and his everyday Ivar and the public image of Ivar are quite different, I would say. So I think the public image is more like that he's really rough and kind of interfering with people and their everyday businesses, which at least I cannot confirm, because my experience is quite different. So he has been, I have had freedom to do what I want in my job. Of course, there are certain things which are decided by the board, and this is normal. But on an everyday business, I don't get phone calls from him, and he doesn't want me to turn around my decisions or whatever. So this is, I think it's, on one way, it's like a myth, you know, that he's everywhere, and he, I think it's even not possible to manage everything by one person. It's just but on the other hand, he's of course very active. This is something there's no need to deny, that he's doing a lot of things. He puts a lot of energy in, and so I think the public perception and the reality are quite significantly different from each other. So that's at least my experience.
No, yeah, so it's nice to get an opinion of him because, well, we've never met him, but yeah, general opinion, like you said, it seems to be, yeah, quite negative, especially from our point of view, anyway, from what you hear and.
Yeah, but definitely he's not your typical Football Association president. That's definitely. So he, even starting from the way he looks like and the way he dresses, it's clear that he's not a typical Football Association president. So I think when you put this in an English context, that a club leader or an association leader it's not the typical club or association leader. So definitely he's how would I say it? He's you will people feel positive, either positive or negative, but they don't discard him, let's say. They always they see him and they have an opinion about him. So definitely that's clear. So many these kind of officials, you know, who are in a suit and with a tie and everything, you don't really see them, you don't really recognize them, but definitely you recognize Ivar. So that's for sure.
Yeah, nice. I think that basically answers all the questions we have for you. So what we like to do is we like to go and do some quick fire questions with you. We just have 10 questions. We by the way, first thing that comes to your head and answer away.
Yeah.
So if we start off with the first one, what is one rule that you would change in football?
I would reform VAR.
Okay, this was our next question. Are you in favor of VAR?
In principle, yes, but I would reform it.
How would you do that?
I would not, you know, VAR was designed for the situations where the referee makes clear and obvious mistakes. But I'm not sure if a fraction of offside is a clear and obvious mistake, and if we should look 3 minutes to it. if it's clear and obvious, like I remember the goal, the England goal, which wasn't a goal actually, or actually it was a goal, but it wasn't accounted for against Germany. This was a clear and obvious mistake. A clear and obvious mistake is if you misinterpret a real tackle for a dive or something like this. This is a real clear and obvious mistake. But if we really start to go and look at the screens for 3 minutes and then we even don't understand, then I think this is not worth it.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, let's see. Who do you think is the best player in the world?
As an athlete, definitely Ronaldo. As an athlete, because to be so many years in such a top shape, this is absolutely unbelievable. I'm not a fan of Ronaldo. I've never been, but just this is the respect I have for him being in the top shape for such a long time. This is incredible.
Would you rather play in a World Cup final or a Champions League final?
World Cup final for sure. I'm a fan of national team football. Clubs are also nice, but they come second for me.
Yeah, nice. True patriot. Who do you think is the top young talent in Estonia at the moment?
Patrik Kristal and Toni Värjunds, I would say the two who have just moved abroad as well.
And if you were to be transformed into an animal, what would it be and why?
I've always loved cats. I was afraid of dogs for many years, but then this changed, and then I had also a dog. So dogs and cats, but I would then pick cats because this was my original kind of animal. And why? Because I think they are cute, but they are very capable of making a mess.
Would you rather travel to the past or the future?
The past. I wouldn't. I don't have an exact time period, but maybe the 1930s. So to see the independence period of Estonia before that, and to see the national team playing before that, and maybe I have the. I'm very kind of naive. As a person, so. I'm thinking always very positively, so maybe I would influence the historical events in the 1930s so that Estonia would not be occupied and Estonia would remain independent. So that's maybe my naive wish.
Nice. Absolutely. What would you choose as your last meal on Earth?
Oh, that's a good one. That's a really good one. I would choose something with potatoes for sure, because you know Estonians and potatoes. Something with potatoes. I'm not sure what it is, but something with potatoes for sure, because I love potatoes. I do eat a lot of pasta as well, but as a kind of typical Estonian, I love potatoes. So in all forms, like in boiled, fried, mashed, whatever.
Do you eat jacket potatoes in Estonia?
Jacket,
Jacket potatoes, yeah. So
that's
it's
like.
basically a whole potato, skin on, in the oven
Oh,
for
yeah.
however
Oh,
long.
yeah,
Cut
right.
it. Yeah.
It's not traditional, but yeah, once in a while, I've. Once in a while, I think it's like more like a modern Estonian cuisine now. It's yeah. Once in a while, yeah. It's not that mainstream, I would say.
Sure, yeah. How much does the amount of traffic affect your mood?
I try to avoid traffic. So I try to come to work just after the traffic jam, and then which also means that I stay at work for longer, and then so I try to avoid the traffic. I'm not fond of traffic jams, but But I tried to speak, then I tried to make phone calls while driving, of course, with hands free, and try to still concentrate on driving. But especially when you are in a traffic jam, I think to use the time properly, then I make a couple of phone calls normally.
Nice. What would you say is your worst habit?
I think all kinds of different things which are connected to looking my phone too many times a day. So different apps on my phone. So I think that's a really bad habit. And even I don't need anything from my phone. And it's just like a habit sometimes. I try to kind of avoid it, but sometimes it's really hard because I think it's also psychologically proven that that the smartphones are really designed to attract people to use it again and again. And this is really a problem. So I try to use it as less as possible.
Final question then. What is your favorite word? So it could be an Estonian word, an English word.
It's a good question again. Definitely something in Estonian. Maybe even I think Eesti as Estonia. This is maybe because I'm a patriot of my country, and I love where I live, and this kind of I wouldn't like to move from Estonia to live in another country, or even I can be critical of the four seasons we have here and the long winter and whatever, but I very much like the Estonian nature and the people here, so I would say then Eesti.
Yeah, nice. It's a good one actually to end it. Thank you for coming on. Say it's been a real honor actually. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for the invitation, and I really hope that you have the energy to carry on with your podcast for many, many years to come.
Yeah, appreciate it. I hope so too. Yeah, just, yeah, I appreciate you coming on, giving up your time. Yeah, thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, cheers.
Thank you. Cheers.